The only way to really bring incredible talent is to have an insanely ambitious goal. And aviation specifically has not been disrupted. And so I think there's an opportunity to go attract the best talent, to go remake an industry that I think, frankly, humanity wants to see remade.
You're listening to The Stand Up from Monday.com, where we talk to real leaders every episode to get their sharpest insights. Today on The Stand Up, I'm so excited to host Adam Goldstein, who is the CEO of Archer, which is an electric vertical aircraft company. Adam's going to talk all about how to lead a team through adversity, how to hire and retain talent, and the role of creativity and focus in making sure a team stays on track. Let's get started. I'm so pleased to have Adam Goldstein here with us on the podcast today. Adam is the CEO and founder of Archer, which is a company that's developing electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft for use in urban air mobility networks. In other words, their mission is to make flight even more accessible with smaller aircraft that can move and operate in urban spaces. Prior to that, he was a co-founder at Vettery. And then also, he's right now a member of the board of directors for the Museum of American Finance, which is a role he's held for more than a decade. Thanks so much for joining us, Adam.
Thanks. Good to be here.
You are leading a company with a really ambitious vision. I'd love to hear kind of a story about how this idea came to be, and how did you start kind of even pitching it to people that you wanted to work with?
Call it late 2010s. Elon Musk has become very famous at this point. I invested in SpaceX and followed everything he did and was following a lot of the electrification transformation. And so I was always fascinated by aircraft, especially as a kid. And so I, started experimenting and trying to do some math to understand, could you actually electrify a plane? And Elon would talk about it. All things would go electric, everything outside of rockets. And does the math actually even work? And so the math really does check out. And you can do the back of the envelope math and really see that you can start to carry enough stuff far enough, fast enough, if energy density and batteries got to a certain point, which they had started to cross. And so that's the point where I went back to the University of Florida and recruited a bunch of PhDs and professors and students to go out and start building aircrafts. So it was actually easy to get people to come work on the project. The problem was even finding a place physically to set up in a college campus, which did not really, is not really like set up to host entrepreneurs. So we ended up building a building on campus. And that building was built off of the Archer Road, which is the main road that goes through Gainesville, Florida. And so that's where the name Archer comes from. So everybody worked in the Archer lab, and we started building 5 foot, 10 foot, electric vertical takeoff and landing aircrafts. Once the math worked, then all of a sudden it was really clear that this was go time. There was a real chance to go build the next generation of aerospace companies, and you had an opportunity here to actually go change the world. And so it started slowly, but then went very quickly.
How do you talk to your team and then think, okay, we've got to make a really big strategic decision. We're going to go down a path that probably will have a lot of ramifications. How do you involve the team in helping you make those decisions that are probably really, really complex?
So building airplanes or any type of aircraft, helicopters, it's a very mathematical process. And when you look at vehicles today, the helicopters and really, fixed wing airplanes, they kind of all look the same. And they look that way because it's a mathematical problem. And once you've sort of made the solution as efficient as possible, everybody just keeps repeating that solution. Why would you build something with, a different shape that would cause a different level of performance that hasn't been already worked on for the past 100 years? So when the electric engine was created, all of a sudden you had this new propulsion system that could scale in a way that was totally different. So instead of having one big engine or a couple big engines, you could scale electric engines down and you could use as many engines as you wanted because they would stay efficient. If you tried to scale down a piston or combustion engine, they would not stay efficient and it wouldn't work. And so now you can design an aircraft that has 2 engines, 100 engines, 1,000 engines, it doesn't matter. You could do whatever you want. And so one of the big choices that I made was I wanted to build a product that would have an emotional connection. I didn't want to build an airplane that was purely mathematical. I wanted to build a product that people wanted to touch, they wanted to ride in. It gave us an opportunity to reinvent how aviation was done. And I thought that was a really cool opportunity. So that was a big design, was a big part of what we were doing, making sure we could create something that was not just purely mathematical. And so specifically, my design team sits outside of the engineering team. And that is very controversial because all of the engineers want the plane to just be as efficient as possible and make it look back like everything else would look. The second thing we did was I focused on survival. survival was the number one characteristic when designing this plane outside of design. And so that meant we could build something that was certifiable and manufacturable from the very beginning. And so I did not want to build the highest flying, fastest flying, farthest flying object. And that was what most of my competitors were focused on. But I wanted to build an aircraft that was survivable. And so getting past a regulator is extremely hard because the safety standards are so high. So if you don't design that way from the very beginning, it can be really challenging. So the way I would phrase that, and I still do it today, we have our, you know, our quarterly conference calls. I still phrase every time, you know, I open up with, we're trying to find the most efficient path to market. That's literally what we tried to do. So we designed a beautiful aircraft that's trying to find the most efficient path to market. Those guiding principles, I think, have set the decisions that we've made from the very beginning and have helped keep everybody on track to know exactly what we're doing. And so I shaped the bigger picture, but of course there's very specific PhDs across hundreds of different disciplines that help make the individual decisions.
How do you balance that kind of, we have a few major focus points that we want to make sure that we're driving against, but we also want to create some sort of really inspiring, creative vision and not lose the magic, let's say, in what you're doing?
The beauty of creating a totally new category is it gives you a chance to be creative in so many different ways. You don't necessarily just have to be creative on the product itself. And so we really do try to limit the creativity on the product because, again, if we have to make a decision, you know, do I want to figure out how to have a gull wing door, a door that, you know, goes up like this instead of a normal door that goes like this? But the FAA does not have a way to certify that. We're not going to choose the gull wing door, even though could you do it? Sure. It's just unknown. We're not going to do that on V1 because it's just not the most efficient path to certifying. And so those rules help us stay efficient in terms of our decision-making process. But the rest of the ecosystem that we build has the opportunity to be incredibly creative. So when you look at places like, where are these, you know, these aircraft going to take off and land from? So we call those vertiports. So I think like a heliport. There's so many things we can do to be creative, to totally reimagine that. And so we built this ecosystem all around Los Angeles that's built in a way that I think is super creative with beautiful design that's outside of the aircraft design itself. So it gives us the ability to flex our creative muscle, but at the same time, not change or not slow down the core mission, which is making sure we can, you know, find the most efficient path to market.
There's a lot of lessons there for anybody working in any industry that's either faced by a lot of regulation or simply you have technical specifications that you can't kind of go out of. And how do you infuse creativity and creative thinking in other places on your teams and give leaders other places that they can have creative control? How do you make sure that those teams don't stay siloed?
Yeah, it's a very Apple-like decision. So Apple did something very similar, and it definitely is controversial because it's where does the power lie? Who makes those final decisions? So one of the things we do try to do is create opportunities for the groups to connect even socially outside of work. But no matter what you do, you're still putting, you're mixing kind of oil and water. You're mixing a team that wants to make a product beautiful with a team that wants to make a product efficient. And they typically are the opposite when it comes to aviation. And so you have to, I think, hire well there. And you have to bring on people that I think can appreciate, though, the beauty of the aircraft. So when we, you know, showed the design of the aircraft to a lot of the engineers, there were a lot of things on there that they wanted to get rid of. And whenever we show the aircraft to some really hardcore aircraft designers, they always say, oh, here's 10 different things that I would do to make this vehicle more efficient. And that's okay. And that's just something we have to learn to eat and accept. And having more of like a visionary founder at the top making those calls is the only way to make that happen, because otherwise those two teams would just eat each other alive. But the payoff has been amazing. We've won a lot of different design awards. Nobody else in the industry has won anything like that. And so I think it's really clear that we have built something that's beautiful, something that people want to touch, and that's a differentiator versus the competition.
Absolutely. I think, like you said, establishing that emotional connection is super, super important when you're building these kind of products. Tell me a little bit about how you approach hiring for these roles that you know are so crucial for the success of your company and for Archer.
So my last company, Vettery, was focused actually on the talent industry. And so we were a marketplace that would showcase really high-end candidates, and then companies would come to that marketplace and they would request interviews with those candidates. And ultimately created this system that would drive, you know, people getting hired. We had, you know, at peak around 20,000 customers, pretty much everyone in tech used it. and it was a sort of central part of the tech ecosystem. But what it gave me was a peek into how the best companies hire. And so I got to learn, I got to see all their metrics, I got to see how they did it, I got to see what good recruiters looked like for bad recruiters. And it gave me a chance to understand, you know, how important hiring talent really is. So if you look at the core team at Archer, so the core engineers, the leaders that have, you know, helped develop everything, they're all still there. We haven't lost a single core engineer since we've started. And I think that was a really big deal. And we have faced extreme adversity. And so I would say, you know, recruiting is the number one thing, but the only way to really bring incredible talent is to have an insanely ambitious goal. If you're going out to change all of transportation and potentially change the way people live and work, you have a chance to recruit some absolutely incredible people. And then when you look at the legacy companies that are out there, they've done an amazing job building amazing products, but they're a bit tired and people want to go work for these new brands. And aviation specifically has not been disrupted. And so I think there's an opportunity to go attract the best talent to go remake an industry that I think, frankly, humanity wants to see remade.
What do you think is the secret to maintaining that talent? Is it that ambitious vision? Or are there other things that you feel that you do as a company or as a CEO that kind of keeps the talent there?
I think it's really specifically what works for you, like what works for your company, what works for your specific setup. With us, I think there are clear points where we need to keep certain talent through certain parts of the process. There's so much institutional knowledge across the aircraft that it'd be too devastating to lose certain people. And I think they understand that. And it's a journey that's been started and people want to see finish. So the ambitious goals are really important. The life cycle of where you're at is important. But I do think it's different for everybody. And you've seen, I would say, counter to what every talent expert has said. And you have to stop and ask the questions of, hey, maybe we're all thinking about this wrong and there is some other secret sauce that works better. I personally don't get it. And we haven't followed that type of philosophy. But just saying that everybody has to make it work in their own way.
I'd love to go into like kind of this like professional fire round. It's just really, really quick questions. One sentence piece of advice.
The bigger you go, the more attractive it is to everybody else. Therefore, actually, the easier it is.
That's great. What is the one thing that everybody gets wrong about being a CEO?
There's a saying that, you know, being the CEO is very lonely. And it certainly can be. But that's only if you manage it that way. I think having a solid team of executives around the CEO can make it much more of a team-oriented, you know, company and doesn't have to be a lonely job. I think thinking the CEO can solve all the problems is false, and thinking the CEO should solve all the problems is false.
Super powerful. I mean, I think we see so many situations where the CEO is really lonely, as you said, and making all the decisions on their own, and usually the company suffers. Would love to hear from you, a podcast, piece of media, something that you're consuming right now that you can't live without.
I don't know if it's I can't live without, but I'll tell you what I'm really into, that I really like. It's, I think the All In podcast does a really good job. You know, I've gotten to know that team. I presented at the All In Summit, but they do such a good job of helping you stay in touch with politics, with tech, with news, and they give you the bite-size, you know, way to digest it. And I think it's a really good way because I work so much and I'm so into my own thing that sometimes I need to like lift my head up and hear about the rest of the world that's going on. And they really capture it in a unique way that's entertaining. And so I think that's a really good one to pay attention to.
Amazing. And Adam, before we wrap up, if our guests want to hear more about you or learn more about you, where can they go? What can they do?
I present a lot through Archer, through the Archer kind of social media channels. You can find most of those presentations. But I would say we are going to launch next year. And the goal is to start putting these aircraft out commercially, starting really in the UAE, but then expanding into the US, you know, quickly behind that. You will see a lot of media come out about this new industry. So follow us on our channels and you will see a lot of content that is produced.
It was a pleasure hosting Adam today on The Stand Up. I was struck by three major lessons. The first is the role that creativity and emotion play in inspiring and driving teams around a strategic vision. The second is how intentionally structuring teams in specific ways, like Adam's decision to structure the design team and the engineering team separately, has a profound impact on the way that the company will make strategic decisions and design its products moving forward. And the third, that it's really, really important for the CEO to have camaraderie with the other executives. it's important to make sure that the CEO isn't the only one driving the decisions around a company's future. And without that kind of camaraderie, being an executive can be a really lonely place. I know several of these lessons are going to stick with me moving forward, and I'm really excited to see what Adam and his team accomplish next. Our next stand-up is in 2 weeks. Before you go, if you found this episode thought-provoking, consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about our conversation or more takeaways to help with all the leadership roles you play, visit monday.com or sign up for our newsletter. Links are in the show notes. We'll see you at our next stand-up.